from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
I am Jacob Fortan, your host.
And I'm Ryan Harkness, your co-host. I'm still here.
He's alive. It turns out he wasn't dead.
Did you say I was dead?
I said you were dissolving in my bathtub.
Oh, that's very nice.
Well, you know, you weren't around. What can I say?
Well, what can I say? Maybe next week, while you're not around, I'll record a show with someone else.
I would actually look forward to hearing your thoughts and somebody else, some miscellaneous person, because I'm going to be on vacation, so no podcast next week. Of course, I'm sure everybody's going to be real saddened about that, but hey, what can I say? You know, it's I haven't had a vacation in a year, so yeah, I'm doing it.
Jacob has heard about everything about that the sex tourism, and he really wants to try it out.
Well, there's many choice destinations, but you know, Malaysia, that's the place to go.
Oh man, I've seen Law and Order episodes about that.
Yeah, hey, you know what's funny? When we were playing the intro song, there, the song by the Monkees, and that's the Monkees version, people.
Oh, we refuse to use this. Like Jake was saying, just get the Smash Mouth version, and I was like, there's no way in hell.
You can use it here. You can use it. It's all good. You're not going.
I don't know why I hesitated, but I thought there I was going to use the. You know, I try and censor myself. But there's no way in hell that we're going to use the Smash Mouth version.
It's a little overwhelming. It's just because when you kind of hear the original version, you can't help but hearing the other version, the Smash Mouth version in your head while you listen to it. And it takes away some of the pleasure of actually that old song. I mean, they didn't play their own instruments, but they sure had a nice little funk going.
I just like the fact, I mean, I find music nowadays is so... They fill it up so much. Like, if you take a look at...
It's heavy.
Yeah. Like, I mean, we do this, like, I've got an audio background, and you open up a file, a music file from the Monkees, and, like, all of the levels are very low, and it's not overwhelming. But you open up one of these newly produced things, and basically the volume is extremely high throughout the whole thing. So no matter where an instrument is in the song, it's just... It's overpowering. It's way too loud. And for me... This old version is where it's at. It's nice and relaxing, and it really got me in the mood for some of those old 70s dance, 60s dance moves.
We were pulling the moves. I wish this was a video cast so you guys could actually see the kind of sweet moves we were pulling.
I'm trying to think. Very white. I was doing the window washer.
I was doing that Pulp Fiction thing.
Very nice. Very original.
All right, on today's show, we're going to talk about two things. Number one, we're going to talk about Darren Brown's video that's on my site. And I'm going to try to explain, because there's a few people that emailed me, and they were kind of like asking, how does he do it? And I'm going to answer that question as best of my ability. Obviously, I'm not a hypnotist, but I think I can answer it fairly well.
If you haven't checked out these videos, pause the podcast. We'll be back. We'll be here when
Oh, we'll be here.
And check it out, as usual. This is think of the website as a reader. And you know, like, those are your notes. That's your homework. If you want to follow along, play the home game. You gotta keep up with the site.
If you're listening to this on an MP3, you're screwed.
We'll explain it.
We'll explain. Basically,
we're verbose.
Yeah. Okay. Well, if you don't want to see the video and you want to have the 3-minute and 45-second version of it, it's really simple. Darren Brown has this show in the UK, and essentially him going around and doing a bunch of tricks to essentially debunk. You got, you know, the psychics and I guess on this one he's trying to debunk those, you know, sort of crazy faith healer guys and those individuals that put on a big show to try to get people converted and stuff like that.
At the same time, what he's basically trying to do is he's trying to prove to people how easy it is and how easy it is to manipulate people into believing in the unseen and the unprovable.
Right, exactly. So... That's the thing we're going to talk about. Also, we're going to talk about Pascal's Wager. Now, some of you may not have heard of Pascal's Wager. I'll be explaining that a little bit later on in the show, what that
is. Give us a preview.
The preview is this idea that Blaise Pascal, who was this philosopher, essentially said that there were four possibilities for God. Either possibility number one, that there is a God and you do believe in him, and so you get ultimate rewards. Possibility number two, there is a God, you do not believe in him, and you get, you know, eternal damnation. Possibility number three is that there is no God and you believe in him, and really the worst case scenario, you lost a little bit of time. And number four, where there is no God and you didn't believe in him and all you did was pretty much, you know, save some of your time. So Pascal says you might as well believe because, you know, the chance, the risk, like if you were a gambling man, the risk would just be too great. You might as well try. And so we're going to talk a little bit about that.
And why it's flawed.
And why it is deeply, deeply flawed. But first, let's talk about the Derren Brown a little bit. So you didn't know until I forced you to watch the video. You didn't know what was going on because you're a jerk. You don't check out the site too much.
No, I check it out from time to time, but you know, I do it at work, and you know, I can get away with text on the screen, but YouTube
harder.
Videos and so forth, it's a little bit trickier.
Yeah, you're not as fortunate as I. So, what were your first thoughts when you saw? What did you think? This is what I'm curious. What did you think when you saw?
One of the main things that I thought when I first watched it, now to set you up for the videos and just the idea of it, Derren Brown puts out an ad in the paper to say, come, let's sit down and let's talk about spirituality. And he's saying, you know, if you don't believe or you're undecided, come, let's talk about spirituality. And he gets them all together, and he basically he comes in under the pretense of being a guy who's like a faith healer who has a magical ability to convert people with touch. And that's how he's introduced. And then basically he goes through the motions of tricking these people into believing in God simply through various faith healer trickery, like, you know, touching them on the head, pulling them back. And
just the regular stuff that you could expect on the Sunday evangelical kind of like faith healer conference thing. It's all the same stuff, except for not even as much showmanship. He never yelled hallelujah or stuff like that. He was doing very, very, very basic stuff.
Now, the interesting thing about this is, okay, first off, let me just say this. If you're answering an ad in the paper where that basically says you're undecided, I'm going to be the skeptic in this, because I know, well, do you want to talk first about how you fawn over Derren Brown and how he's your new boyfriend?
First of all, we're just friends. No, me and Big B. The reason I like Derren is pretty simple. I talked to you about this before, but these conjurers, or you know, sometimes they call themselves illusionists, essentially what we know as magicians, a lot of these guys, they are very well attuned to how easy it is to manipulate people. Mm-hmm. And as a consequence, when they watch that, they do, you know, responsibly, but they see all of these other clowns, mm-hmm. that are essentially, you know, pretending that they have magical powers when they're doing their tricks, and usually just much cheaper versions of their tricks. And of course they kind of get mad because they realize just that same mechanism, that same ability for us to be entertained, is the same mechanism that can be used for us to be controlled and for us to be exploited. And Derren Brown is one of those guys that has always, you know, kind of like being mad at those individuals that kind of cheapen his art, because he does always have it as entertainment. He does the same thing that even a James Von Prague, mm-hmm. you know, the guy that from Beyond or whatever his show is called, he does the same thing, but everybody walking in knows that it's a trick. They know it. Now, it doesn't remove away from the performance. People are still kind of like, wow, this is amazing. But
everybody walking to Derren Brown's shows?
Everyone walking into Derren Brown's are told specifically, well, on his regular show.
Yeah, not in this show.
In this case, he goes undercover. He pretends that he's them because he wants to, not that he wants to shame people into seeing that how easy it was for them to be tricked, but he wants to, he needs for them to really be suckered as much as they would be if they were just going to some, you know,
some random person,
some random psychic guy.
And I can understand that. And in that way, you know, like, I mean, watch the video. Your thoughts were basically, it's impressive how easy it is for him to trick all these people, right? That's your general thought?
Well, I know why he is, and I will go into that a little bit, but I wanted to hear your thoughts to see, how do you think he did it?
I want to rebut you.
You want to rebut me?
Yeah, okay. So I want you to go first, and then I want to smash your opinion of this.
Okay, well, first of all, the one thing that you have to understand is that when he starts the video, there's a number of individuals. Most of them are atheists or agnostic. But at the same time, the fact that they're there demonstrates at least some level of either curiosity or, you know, need to discuss spiritual matters. The second thing is that, well, when most of these people that were present discussed their lack of belief I got the general impression that most of them were non-believers, specifically because they had rejected religion, rather than come to that conclusion necessarily by doing, you know, an extensive amount of research on it, or even just trying to think about why there might not be, you know, a God. They just accept the fact that there isn't.
I apologize for the background noise. That's my kid playing the flute.
Yeah, there you go. The trouble with a home podcast is always...
Praise Jesus.
No, but these individuals were what I call rebels without a religion. They're people that go there, that went there having rejected it, but they nevertheless have the same kind of...
Needs?
Not necessarily needs, but they have been influenced and they have been exposed to the culture around religion. They understand, and they, you know, most of the mechanisms, how they work, like how faith healers work. I'm sure they were all familiar with those methodologies. And so there's a great degree of expectation. Even though they may not believe it, it's like when you go see one of those stage hypnotists. You know exactly what's going to happen. And as a consequence, you're going to act accordingly. But if you were from a different culture, you know, didn't necessarily speak the language, would you have this? Would it have the same effect? Absolutely not. Mm. So the tools that you can exploit to kind of get someone to be a believer are already present. A person has just merely chosen to reject them or put them to the side because they decide, well, there's just not enough evidence. And this is how Darren Brown comes in, because the audience is already set up. They're already warmed up. They have this kind of expectation saying, what's this guy going to say? How's he going to prove it? And it's almost like this spirit of like, I dare you to. And what he does is he creates kind of like an experience. The experience is relatively simple. He does a bunch of, you know, kind of magic tricks. One of the big things that he does is there's that guy who's fallen back, right? You're probably wondering, like, how did that guy fall back?
Yeah.
How did it happen? Well, you have to listen to what he says. He says, I'm going to catch you. He didn't say the guy, you're going to fall back. And it's something that's so easy to miss. But you pick up on that when you're part of that, you know, stage, when you're part of the stage audience. And you know there's that expectation for you to fall. All he has to do is read the signs about when you're ready to go. And he gives, like, you know, he makes either a movement that you can see from perhaps even the corner of your eye.
Or he hears the rustling.
Or he hears the rustling of the clothing and then drops. And besides, most of these guys realize that there's a particular time frame which people will just kind of buckle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, stage hypnotists do it all the time, too. And the other thing, when they were all standing and he all pushed them down without mm-hmm. touching them, he was telling them, oh, there's a weight on your chest, and it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And the reason these people fell is that they felt as though the center of gravity was unbalanced because of this imaginary weight that was on them.
Yeah.
These are all hypnotist tricks. They're very simple to do. But, and this is the last part, this is the last part of my argument, there are experiences that are very confusing when you have them. You don't know what's going on. You assume that the experience, because this person seems genuine, seems honest, and tells you that the experience is spiritual in nature, you're bound to believe him. He's not going to tell you this is a trick, this is hypnotic trick, I've just, you know, fooled you. No, they believe that he's being honest, they believe that his power is genuine because he claims that it is, and that does seem to have an effect on them, and they have this confusing experience, and all of a sudden, boom, they all believe, because this is what they were searching for. They went there looking for that experience almost as a dare, mm-hmm. and when he was able to provide that, all of a sudden it's like, boom, okay, I guess there is a God. I definitely believe it.
Yeah.
Because if it would have been me and I would experience that and be like, do you believe in God now? I'm like, I just fell down. mm-hmm. Maybe I believe that there was a, you know, invisible rope around me, or a dragon pushed me over, like, I wouldn't necessarily jump to that conclusion, you know what I mean? So what's your deconstruction going to be like now?
Well, my deconstruction is basically on the idea that, yeah, basically, first point, that like anybody that responds to an ad like that is basically kind of flirting with general ideas. And here's one of the key points that kind of gets a little bit glossed over, which makes everything a lot less impressive, to the idea that, oh, it's so easy for everybody to be tricked. The fact that...
all the non-gullibles left?
Yeah, exactly. Like, basically what happens is he tricks the first person into basically believing in God. And then they kind of, they stop, and like the guy just kind of says, and then at that point half the people left. And I'm like, yeah, no kidding, because half the people all of a sudden realize what kind of thing they've come to.
Right, they've come to some kind of fraudulent guy that's using parlor tricks to try to convince people.
Exactly. So, I mean, everybody that's...
Stayed behind.
Everybody that stayed behind,
automatically.
There are three lights! automatically falls into that kind of more likely to be falling for this kind of thing. And, I mean, it was impressive what he did. from your explanation, I see the not the science, but the
technique.
The technique behind it, and that makes it more impressive to me. But my feelings from watching it was more towards the idea of he was saying, look how easy it is to trick people, and look, these people aren't even believers, and look how easy it is to trick non-believers into becoming believers. And to a degree, it's true, but to another degree, they glossed over a lot of, you know, like, it wasn't exactly what I would call a scientific experiment by any means.
No, but he didn't sell it as that, and you're right. Most of the people that were there had this kind of, they were on the fence. These are individuals that are seriously and quite honestly on the fence.
Yeah.
But you have to realize at the same time, this is a significant portion of the atheist population, individuals that are on the fence, probably like those guys, easily fooled, or that just reject God because they're like they're pissed off.
Well, I'll tell you the truth. I mean, it doesn't have to be easily fooled. These things that this guy was doing was impressive. And if you don't understand the concept behind hypnotism or the power of suggestion, then I can definitely see. I mean, when you're in a room and a person is basically a very charismatic person is basically seeing, like that second guy, the guy that he got to fall over. When the host was basically, when Darren Brown was basically saying, experiencing this, are you still comfortable saying that you're absolutely sure there is nothing out there? And all of a sudden he has to say, well,
not so much anymore.
Well, yeah, because he didn't say, wow. Well, at first he didn't say, wow, I believe in God. At first he basically said, this makes me reconsider what I believed in. And basically what you have is you have a guy controlling the unexplained and a guy saying, this is why this is happening. It's like, you know, a 3-year-old asking why and the parent telling him why, the 3-year-old's going to believe it because that parent is in that position of power to be believed because they have the answers.
Well, there's that, you know, obviously it's the, what I was saying before, they genuinely believe that what Mr. Brown, or he had an alias, obviously, in that,
yeah,
what he was trying to do and that he was being very honest about the fact that he had these powers. So if we accept the fact that someone who's telling you something is being completely genuine and honest about it, that they're not tricking you, if you accept that, whatever they do, you're going to believe as authentic. Just like if you trust that I am a psychic and that I can read your future, you're going to believe that everything that I do is authentic and a display of my power.
Yeah.
You're not going to question saying, well, you know, that statement could be made by just about anyone.
Yeah.
If you accept that fact, then anything I tell you, and this is the interesting thing, because I was saying that this is not so much a scientific proof about how easy it is to fool people, but how basically the mechanisms of control exist. Mm-hmm. If someone that you trust very much, and you've trusted for most of your life, say a preacher, for instance, tells you that during, you know,
it's okay
mass,
to touch, be touched.
No. During mass.
Oh, that's not where you're going?
No.
Oh.
During mass, the wine turns into blood through transubstantiation.
Because I have some stories about that.
We don't want to hear those stories.
I'll save
a lawyer wants to hear that story. You know, make some money. But yeah, like if you're going to believe that just because the same mechanism that allow a 3-year-old to listen to authority, they don't just disappear. They don't just fade one day and they're gone. They still exist within us. And as soon as you tap into that, we do become like children. We are infantilized by, you know, large institutions that utilize that particular faiblesse, if you will,
people,
in human beings.
People want to know things, and it's the idea of, oh, you've got something that's unexplained, and then somebody says, this here is the answer. And unless you have a competing answer, like basically watching this video, the big thing is, if you don't realize that what he's doing is basically a form of hypnotism or suggestion, then what other options do you have? You know, if he was there and he was saying, do you think that was a hypnotic trick or do you think that was a religious experience? I think all of a sudden if you gave people, you know, if you gave people the avenues to be able to explain it in other ways, then they probably could. So it's interesting. It's interesting in that way anyway.
Well, you know, I think that you definitely tapped into something. It's just that we don't. If we choose to be skeptical, it's usually we're skeptical and we already have at least some evidence to fall back on. If you're going to be like, well, I'm skeptical of this claim because I have this other claim that at least backs me up.
But this is the difference between you and me. You're the educated skeptic and I'm just the ignorant skeptic.
But at the same time, like your quote-unquote ignorant skepticism is one, well, if I don't have the answer, I should probably seek it out. I'm not going to instantly believe with this claim made from this individual.
It's more along the lines of, if I don't have the answer, I don't really care.
Well, that's why you're a non-theist. We discussed that in length, I think, during the first podcast.
I'm a non-carist.
Exactly. Non-theist, basically the question or the existence or non-existence of God, you don't give a crap.
I just kind of am annoyed at the idea of God keeping all those girls' panties on. You know what I be saying?
I know what you saying, man. I respect that. I respect your need to have God dissolve panties.
But I don't respect women.
Oh, no, you're in trouble now.
I do too, okay.
You will be dissolved in my bathtub if you keep this up.
Yeah, my girlfriend will dissolve me in your bathtub.
In mine? Oh, no. You have a much nicer bathtub.
This is true.
You have two. So she could dissolve you in one and take showers in the other. So it's all good.
Yeah.
So, okay. So basically, just to recap, I had one guy who was commenting on the site, actually, and because I was saying this proves how easy it is for individuals to be converted, because the mechanism exists for us to subjugate ourselves to the wills or ideas of others. His argument was like, no, this proves that there is a God because he's installed that mechanism inside of you so that you're aware of his presence. Now I tried to tell him, listen, it's a matter of Occam's razor. If the simplest explanation
dropping names.
Okay, Occam's razor is simple. The simplest explanation is usually the correct one. If the explanation is just merely we have this mechanism that's inherent in our childbirth for us to listen to people of authority, and that it, you know, continues to it doesn't subside when we become adults, or is there a particular mechanism that was put there by an all-seeing, omniscient God in order as a tertiary way to make you feel his presence, when at the same time you could just as well believe in the supernatural cat from Venus? Which is the simplest explanation, honestly? And you could try to use that to justify, you know, well, that exists because there is a God, but that's going about it pretty backwards.
Yeah.
It's like saying that the reason why you have a nose is that so you can put your glasses on them. I mean, that's not the reason why you have a nose. Mm. It just turns out that you can put glasses because of the shape. You can't work backwards and suddenly say, hey, this is why God put this there.
Yeah.
And besides, as a mechanism for making us aware of his presence, I mean, is this the best that he could do? Like, honestly.
Oh, don't try and understand God, Jacob.
Well, no, my head would go up in a puff of smoke.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, let's wrap it up and move on to Pascal's Wager.
All right.
Did I spell it right? Is it P-A-S-C-A-L?
You know, I'm a terrible speller. I don't even know. I'm pretty sure.
Or is it
actually
like Pasquale's?
No. It's Pascal. Pascal.
Okay. Tell me a little bit first about who is this dude?
Blaise Pascal. He was basically a philosopher and theologian, and his whole idea.
So he was a religious.
He was a religious philosopher.
Worked for the church. Wrote a whole bunch of stuff.
I'm not 100% sure actually on his contributions other than that.
So he's like kind of a one hit wonder, no greatest hits album.
I actually believe he was also a mathematician, although don't quote me on that. Mm. Basically, here's the thing though: you have to understand about Europe and European philosophers, at least that we're aware of. These are all individuals that never disproved or dealt with issues of God. For them, it was always kind of like there is one, and Descartes said, well, you know, we exist because there's, you know, obviously a benevolent being wouldn't allow me the opportunity to be conscious, and, you know, with he's like the first cause kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Argument. It was Berkeley who said that God was the one that's always awake to keep the universe in place. Whatever. All of these philosophers that we deal with and that we're made aware of are all religious fellas.
Basically because the ones that weren't typically got burned at the stake.
Yeah, they either got burned or their material suppressed. So in that tradition, it's almost like the idea of a Judeo-Christian God was never anything that they had to contemplate outside of the fact that it exists.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the first flaw in Pascal's wager. Because Pascal says that the first part, that there is a God, and if you believe in him, then there's eternal rewards. Well, my question to Pascal would be, which one? Taking a conservative estimate as the number of religions that there are and the number of divisions within these religions, and we'll just say a conservative number of maybe a few hundred.
Yeah.
Okay? Within those few hundred, and they all make this claim that if you believe in another one, then you don't believe in the right one. Okay, we'll accept that claim because evidently different gods have very specific mandates, rules that you must follow, traditions that you must, and if you don't, well, you're going straight to hell. Or for the Jews, you're not even, there is no hell. You're just going to evaporate away from God's love. Anyways, it doesn't matter. So just from a gambling point of view, already you don't have four options. Now you have a few hundred options.
Well, just to be straight, Pascal's wager, like the whole idea of calling it the wager was the fact that he was saying this is a bet.
Yeah.
These are the options, and your best chance, your best odd, is to bet on option one, which is believe in God and go to heaven. Because
option number two is really not
like basically, if you do believe in God and you get to heaven, then that's really good. But if you don't, if you do when he doesn't exist, no big deal. But if you don't and he does, then you're really screwed.
Right, you're really screwed.
Yeah.
But the problem is, and obviously he couldn't see that from his Judeo-Christian point of view, that there really are a lot of gods, and these claims are not compatible. So you have to pick one. All right, well, how do you go about picking one? I mean, what choices? You could just take a dartboard and just throw it at one, just basically say, I'm going to believe in that guy.
Do Muslims believe that Christians go to hell?
Yeah, if you don't believe...
In Muhammad?
Well, if you don't believe that, you know, Muhammad was God's last prophet. I mean, they do believe
and
in, for instance...
Christians believe Jews go to hell because they don't believe in Jesus. Because it's salvation through Jesus, right?
Right. It's
only through Jesus.
Only through Jesus. Only. And the Holy Ghost and the Father. And they don't believe in the Trinity.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you deny the Holy Ghost or you deny Jesus, then you are going to hell.
Yeah.
Oh, sucks to be you. But and obviously the Jews are like, well, you guys don't really believe in you don't know what you're talking about. You've perverted our religion. You're going to hell.
Yeah,
or not hell because they don't have one hell. But apparently, being separated from God's love is like hell.
Yeah,
I guess. But okay, so looking back at Pascal's wager, now you have a few hundred options. Now the odds of you choosing the right one, not so good.
Or even understanding the rules that you might have to follow. To be considered, you know, saved.
Well, that brings me actually to point number three, because I'm going to jump a little bit around. Point number three is you don't you do believe in God, but there is no God, and the worst you would have is wasted a little bit of time. Well, let's examine exactly what you mean by wasting time. I mean, let's look at some of the more radical versions of Islam and of Christianity. And would you really say that it's just a little bit of wasted time? Because you have to look at the fact that they punish anyone for having sexual thoughts. They're extremely repressive. You have to be subjugated your entire life. You have to live for God. There's really no breathing room here. You have to follow laws and edicts very, very strictly, and you're always worried about your own death. I mean, there really is no time for you to enjoy life here. You have to be preparing yourself for death. Your entire life is preparing for that. Now, if Pascal really believes that if all there is to this life is what we have now, that you spending your entire life on your bended down on one knee looking at the ground as opposed to enjoying yourself, looking at the sky, living your life, I would say, Pascal, that is a huge loss. That is a massive, massive loss.
Well, I got to say, and I don't want to, you know, ruin your rant, because I love the rant. This whole point is really cool. It's groovy. I dig it. But I mean, Pascal shows his bias where he says, you know, oh, you believe in God and there is no God, so you lose a little bit of time. That's obviously bull because, you know, people do end up spending a lot of time and there are a lot of downsides. You, on the other hand, are showing your level of bias because you're saying that a life believing God is not basically not a life worth living.
No, that's not what I meant. What I said was if he really thinks that there is absolutely no wasted time, consider... I'm not saying, like, all matters of religion. Most people are moderates anyways.
Mm-hmm.
So... in that sense, sure, all they are, you know, potentially wasting some time. But you have to understand that even those moderates, that people that I've talked to, that have like, you know, that no longer do believe, have had some very serious psychoses because of their religion. Like one of my friends, he has problems dating women because he thinks that it's a sin. And, you know, like Christianity, they don't always look at women in a very kind way.
And as I said, there's lots of women who just won't take their pants off because of God.
Yeah. And you know, other than that, you know, people having nightmares about hell and eternal torment. And this is a serious thing. When you tell a kid, even if it's sort of like an off thing, that if you do things that are bad, you will burn in hell forever, and you give them vivid imagery.
And
this is why people consider religion to be child abuse, because you really are screwed. My dad had some serious nightmares for years about, like, the devil, like, you know, swinging him from his leg. They were pretty tame compared to nowadays. But
wasn't your dad raised by nuns or something?
Yeah, he went to Catholic school, you know, like...
That's hardcore.
That is really hardcore, but you have to remember that not everybody in the world is a moderate. As a matter of fact, religious moderation is pretty much a Western thing. If you go to Latin America or you go to, you know, any other country where the level of education is not quite as high as here, the churches still rule. They're still the ones that are teaching people, and they're not exactly all hoity-toity and then, oh, you know, it's fine, other religions are great. No. They're on a serious mission of conversion. Mm-hmm. I mean, the entire, like, Africa itself is on fire as different religions are trying to vie for, you know, the poor people that are there. As a matter of fact, the Catholic Church eliminated limbo specifically to make it more attractive to Africans who are losing their babies, like, you know, 25,000 kids dying every day that are unbaptized. And they were like, yeah, we don't like your religion because my baby's in limbo now. Okay, we get rid of limbo. Yeah. So unbaptized babies still go to heaven. This is a marketing maneuver. Mm-hmm. But you have, like I said before, I mean, for all of the good that it does for some individuals, we cannot deny that for many, it is still kind of like a form of neuroses, and it's, you know, painful, frightening for some, and it's, and sometimes it's really, you know, you're trying to wrap your head around it. What does God want me to do? And you're just constantly in this cycle of doubt and depression and hating your own body. It's just, it's not always all good. So there is that part to consider in Pascal's mm-hmm. Wager. Not that I won't deny that some people can live perfectly happy lives and just have wasted only a bit of time, but you have to consider the entire wager before you can say, well, you know, no, it'll only be a little bit of wasted amount of time. That's not true at all, and I can definitely find you millions of witnesses that will tell you the fact that, no, it wasn't just a little bit of wasted time, it was a little bit more. Okay, so moving on to point number two, because I told you I'd be skipping around. Okay, so there is a God and you don't believe him and you go to hell. Well, odds are, because of number one, you're not going to find the right one. So you're going to go to hell anyways. Which brings me back to point three and four, which is, like, honestly, if you're just going to not believe and there is one, I mean, you're going to burn in hell. Even if you believe in one, you're probably not believing in the right one. It all boils down to point number two. We're probably going to all end up there if it was just a matter of, you know, a wager, okay, honestly. What do you think the odds of you picking the right one is?
And the odds of you actually being able to go through with everything the right one actually expects you to do.
Performing all the right duties, not disobeying any of the laws which often conflict or almost impossible to follow.
Yeah, but this is under the assumption that God actually exists, and despite the fact that, say, the Bible contradicts itself, there is actually a truth.
No, but, oh, yeah, well, it's the assumption that there is this universal truth.
So where's Pascal's wager where it's like the option where you believe in God, but say, I don't know, you break one of the big rules?
No, that's not part of the wager. It's I guess, too complicated.
Okay.
But, I mean, the odds are you're probably gonna break one of those damn rules. Mm-hmm. You probably will covet your neighbor's wife.
It always just drives me nuts. This is what I hate about born-agains. Born-agains, they can do whatever the hell they want, and then they're born again. I'm like, you know what? That sucks. I mean, I guess it gives me hope for myself, just in case, you know, the last days come and I'm left behind, and all of a sudden I can become
you can
born
go back
again.
Up. Yeah, there you go.
Can be included in one of those terrible novels.
Unfortunately, though, what they fail to mention in the New Testament is that the fact that if you deny the existence of the Holy Ghost, even for just a moment, for a day, for a second, a fraction of a second, if you don't believe in the Holy Ghost, Jesus won't actually forgive you. He will not. You are doomed.
Oh, that was just put in by somebody who is cranky.
He put it in twice. So, yeah, there is that element. But what I was trying to say is that odds are, even if there was, let's just take this wager and say there is a God, right? Mm-hmm. But let's also take that wager that there is one particular truth and that only one religion has that truth. Mm-hmm. If we accept that, then the odds are it's going to be number two. We're all going to end up in hell anyways. And yeah, maybe only a small selected few will end up having that reward. But in all honesty, if I was a gambler and I had to place all my chips, I'd probably place a number two or number four. Because odds are you will end up in hell, but you might as well have a good time while you're here, because apparently you're going to be roasting for quite a while.
No, but here's the, and just to wrap this up quickly, and this is my stupid 2 cents. You know how it's called Pascal's Wager, and he says if you're a gambler, you want to gamble on option one because it has the most rewards. But when you're a gambler, you're not looking at, like if you're looking at, like, say, a roulette table, you're not picking number 13 because number 13 is the most appealing to you. You're picking the number that you think is real and right and what's going to land on the board. So I'm kind of I forgot.
I think what you're trying to say with that is like if you were to pick which one is the most likely.
It's like this. Pascal is saying, you know, option four, which is you don't believe in God and you don't go to hell, but that means you don't win anything. But the whole idea of a wager is if you're right, then you win.
No, but here's the funny thing, too, because whenever you're picking your bets, and you almost had this point, I just wanted to push you a little bit more on this one, is the fact that you always have to look, even if there are four options, okay, four bets, they're not necessarily all equal. Mm-hmm. There are different chances between ones. So say the first option that there is a God and you believe in him, you go to heaven. And again, I had talked about all those other different possibilities. The odds of that actually being true, if you consider the type of evidence that we have either for that existence and so on and so forth, which I won't get into, and then you look at the evidence that there might not be one and that you know, it's just all made up. Mm. These aren't equal treatises. This is not like it's 50-50 chance. No, it's like probably 99.999, and then this is really the long shot. And sure, the long shot could pay off big. Like if you put all your chips on number 13, yeah, if it lands on it, you will be a millionaire. But you have to consider where you should put your chips if you want to walk away home not broke out of your mind. Mm. You have to consider which of the wagers is the best one to put in. And I'll be honest with you, the real chips are the life that you have here. That is what you're risking when you're looking at Pascal's wager. And the risk of missing out on perhaps what is your only chance to exist, merely for you to basically be bent on one knee, is not a decision that is very difficult for me.
I don't like the whole bent on one knee, but I like the idea of saying you want to live and not live to consider.
I'm not
going
to live to die. I'm just not going to obsess about what's going to happen. I'm going to live for now. And you know what? That's my bet. My bet is that this is the only life that we have, and I'm going to live it to its fullest. So, in your face, Pascal.
I like it. So,
all right, with that, we're going to end. We're going to close off, and I'll see you guys in 2 weeks after my vacation.